Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to GameBuoy.org Video Game Podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. Today is February 2nd, 2013, and we're going to be talking to you a little bit about the tragic side of the games industry here on episode 20 of our show. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as ever and always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Happy Hedgehog Day, everybody.
Like I mentioned, we're going to talk a little bit about the tragic side of the games industry today. But first, we have a couple of follow-ups for you. Obviously, the big follow-up since our last episode is the end of the THQ bankruptcy saga. But as you may have suspected, we're going to discuss that during our discussion topic for the week. Otherwise, Etrian Odyssey 4 by Atlas, which we've talked up here a considerable amount on the show in previous weeks, has a demo coming to the eShop for 3DS on February 7th.
That's pretty cool. Atlas is trying to make it happen, so we're on their side.
Yeah,
I guess
definitely.
That's all I can say.
I'm a fan of the series. Probably not for everyone. First-person dungeon crawl. You sort of have to use the touchscreen to make your own maps of the dungeons. If you enjoyed the old Wizardry games, you should definitely check this out. And really, I mean, you know, since there's a demo coming up this week, probably everyone with a 3DS should download it and give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, unless you have no space on your SD card, but really that's no excuse at all.
Yeah, it's enough of not an excuse that you probably shouldn't have bothered saying it.
Oh, shut up.
I hear you have a follow-up for us.
We do have a follow-up. We have a little bit of an update, actually a lot of an update, on the Reddit Gamers drama that we talked about quite a while ago at this point. As you might remember, Chris Vizzini,
who definitely doesn't have herpes, but, you know, obviously some people have herpes, so maybe he does.
Of course, sent a cease and desist letter to Reddit because he owns the trademark Gamers. And as we've mentioned on the show before, you know, this has had implications for GamerCon, which is now GamerX. Of course, they worked out some fair use issue, but I mean, it's been a big source of drama overall, and it's just really has made Chris Vizzini, who probably doesn't have herpes.
He almost certainly doesn't have herpes, statistically
speaking, some gay men do have herpes.
Including ones who identify themselves as gamers.
Yes. Anyway, the bottom line is that Reddit is going to, not Reddit specifically, but Reddit gamers community is going to fight back. They are getting some help from the Electronic Frontier Foundation and a law firm based in San Francisco, I believe, called
Perkins Coie.
Perkins Coie. That sounds kind of like a Banjo-Kazooie or something.
It totally does, and you know, I actually, in my actual real life, have worked with some folks over in that office. They're good people.
And the thing that's notable is that Perkins Coie is agreeing to do this, is it the correct term, pro bono?
We would typically say bono.
Bono.
But it's not, they do not sing for U2, it's not anything like that.
I am very pro bono, I'm a big U2 fan.
Moving on.
Yeah, so they're going to try and fight this because the term gamer had been used for years before he applied for the trademark, and you know, basically they're just arguing what we've been saying all along, that what he's trying to do is just serve his own self-interest. And even though he claims that he's trying to promote, you know, a community, he's trying to promote his own community, not the gay gaming community at large. And so, you know, we'll be keeping an eye on this, of course, but, you know, I really don't think Chris Vizzini, who probably doesn't have herpes, but
no, he
we just
almost
like to say that
doesn't.
Always you should be aware of your sexual health, because there may be gay gamers out there who might have herpes.
And some of them may have trademarks on words such as gamer.
That said, you know, I just don't really think he has the case.
But he probably has herpes.
probably not. We don't want.
No, no, he really doesn't.
The next thing you know, Game Booey's going to get a letter, a cease and desist letter, because we're.
How could we get a cease? How could we get a cease and desist letter? We're always saying that he does not have herpes.
Yeah, but it could be counted as slander or libel. I can't remember which is which.
To say that he doesn't have herpes? Gosh, maybe we should say he does.
Well, in that case. We apologize to anyone who is, like, you know, a decent person out there who may have herpes.
Yeah, no, we're actually super pro-herpes, so it's all
good. I am not pro-herpes, but, you know, I am accepting of people who might have herpes.
Moving on.
We need to move on. That's it for our follow-up, so I think it's time to move on to news. 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 Oh, my God. News. Oh, my God. We have a lot of news this week.
And herpes.
We do not have herpes. Will you stop that?
So first up, news that I'm really excited about. Capcom, Namco.
Bandai.
Yes, Namco, Bandai.
And Sega.
And Sega have announced that Project X Zone is coming over to the U.S. for the 3DS.
That's super cool.
I'm super excited about this. It's currently slated for a release here in September of 2013. It came out back in October in Japan, and you might be familiar with it as being, you know, a crossover strategy RPG with more than 200 characters from more than 30 different franchises. It's turn-based strategy with, like, sort of an action component. If you've played any of the other cross games, Cross Edge, Namco Cross Bandai.
Namco? Captain Spike has an important call. We'll be back with you momentarily. So Namco sounds like it would be like the name of a Pokemon. Maybe an evolution of Murkrow or something.
Did he really sit on that joke the whole time I was on the phone?
Yes.
Well played. So, yeah, you might be familiar with this style of game from Capcom Cross Namco. Otherwise, you know, it's cool.
I thought it was Namco Cross Capcom.
I can't even with all this. Y'all know the game I'm talking about. If you're not familiar with it, I suggest checking out the demo for Project X Zone, which doesn't currently exist, but presumably will before this game releases.
Yeah, because 3DS, as we've mentioned, is pretty good with the eShop demos. I'm pretty impressed.
Getting better. Next up, Capcom has announced that they are going to be porting Resident Evil Revelations to the Xbox 360, PS3, PC, and Wii U on May 3rd, 21st of this year. This is exciting because, you know, I don't know if you played the 3DS release of this game, but it was, in a lot of ways, the first real survival horror Resident Evil in the last decade.
Wow.
So it's really cool that they're doing this whole HD port thing.
I love HD remasters.
And for me, the most exciting part is that it's getting a Wii U port, so I'm really excited about that. And on a side note, you know, sort of the same vein of this news, Capcom just on Thursday followed up saying that Resident Evil Revelations is going to be a signpost for sort of the future of the Resident Evil series. You know, the series has been more of an action-based affair since Resident Evil 4. And presumably they're going to be looking at sales of Resident Evil 6 as compares to Resident Evil Revelations HD to see if people would prefer the more action-oriented approach or if survival horror is really where the fans are at.
You know, the thing is that there are a lot of basic gamers out there. I'm not trying to be rude to anyone who's a fan of that style of Resident Evil, but, you know, I hope that even if 6 does sell better than Revelations HD, that they'll still, you know, try and diversify their portfolio, so.
Diversify their portfolio. D. Did you really?
What? It's a perfectly valid thing to say.
Moving on, I want to talk a little bit about the Nintendo Direct event that happened last week. The biggest news, for me of course, is the announcement of Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem. The Fire Emblem guys over at Intelligent...
Speaking of intelligent, someone clearly is not Intelligent Systems.
Is working on this game through cooperation with Atlus.
Like Atlus, what up? I mean, in a good way, what up? Not like what up with that.
The teaser trailer shows all of the main characters from the core Shin Megami Tensei series, as well as the main characters from the core Fire Emblem series. No word yet on whether spin-offs of either series are going to be included, such as the Persona games, but fingers crossed, I would love to see Persona characters interacting with Roy and Marth and, you know, maybe dating and having social links. And...
Shut up!
Now, the thing that I'm interested in is that I'm kind of new to, you know, as far as my awareness of the Shin Megami Tensei series. Is it just me, or is the main series of Shin Megami Tensei, or things that specifically are not Persona, at least, seem to be have a wider appeal in America these days, or in the Western world?
Yeah, well, all of the Shin Megami Tensei games are sort of becoming more popular here in the U.S., so...
And I'm sure it's because of Persona, right?
I would say so. I think that's a fair statement to make.
So, I'm interested in the fact that you said that this was the most exciting news to you, because for me, and I know that you're gonna
say something super basic right now.
Oh, shut up. We all know that you're not a big fan of Zelda, but the big reveal for me was Wind Waker HD, which I never in my wildest dreams imagined would actually be a thing. This is going to be out later this year. October, I think, or fall, at least, is their target date. So, you know, totally refurbished graphics, remastered graphics, rather. I guess this is on a piece of furniture. It's not being refurbished.
Yeah, I'm not really here for
reupholstered. I don't know. What do you mean you're not here? You're not here for a Wind Waker HD remake?
Nope.
Even if they take out the elements like the Triforce map?
I liked that.
You're just trying to be contrary right now, aren't you?
Yep.
Now, be honest
with our
listeners.
I'm trolling you. I don't think that Wind Waker was super huge, OMG, big deal news. I don't think it's nearly as exciting as the announcement of Monolith Soft's new X game, which appears to be a sequel to Xenoblade. With multiplayer elements.
Yeah, that does look cool. As long as it doesn't look like dung, though, you know, dude?
There was the announcement of Yoshi Land, which looks amazing.
Now, that's not an official title yet, is it?
That is the title that the internet is calling it. It is not, strictly speaking, the official title yet.
Because I saw it referred to somewhere. It might have even just been a message board, but I saw someone calling it Yoshi Yarn. Because, of course, it is by the same team as Kirby's Epic Yarn, which... You know, most people may have written off as, like, a childish little, like, ball game, but it was actually really cute.
Well, the reason we're calling it Yoshi Land is because there was a leak on Miiverse right after the launch of the Wii U that had unannounced games listed on it. And it had, like, 13 unannounced games, and, like, 7 of them have now been announced.
Hmm.
And on that list was a game called Yoshi Land.
Interesting.
So... Obviously, people are now assuming that this Yoshi game that is still, strictly speaking, untitled is probably Yoshi Land.
That's interesting because Yoshi Land, I wouldn't see them not making it as part of, like, the Yarn series or whatever.
I don't think Yarn is going to be a series.
Well, this is the second game that is clearly using the same aesthetic, same artistic direction as Kirby's Epic Yarn. So, we'll see. But either way, no matter what it's called, it looks great so far.
Yeah, so that's why to me... And, you know, we also finally got Wii U Virtual Console news.
Yes!
So,
let's talk about that for a minute.
They're going to be releasing games starting this spring. The prices will be the same as the prices for Wii Virtual Console, but if you already have any given Virtual Console games on Wii, you'll be able to upgrade them for Wii U for a nominal fee of $1 for NES games and $1.50 for Super Nintendo games.
Yeah, and for like the ability to play them on the gamepad and have other features like doing quick saves like on the 3DS, that's worth an extra $1, $1.50 for what I already paid. And specifically speaking, that's when it's officially going to start, but we already are getting some Virtual Console games.
Yeah, so I'm actually not done on that point. Really interesting is that when the Virtual Console goes up on Wii U this spring, not only are we going to have NES games and Super Nintendo games to start, we're also going to have Game Boy Advance games. We don't yet have a pricing schedule for that, but a lot of people are already talking about what this might mean for a handful of very important Game Boy Advance games that never got North American releases.
Interesting. Now, was that confirmed being at launch of the Virtual Console? I thought at the launch of the Wii U Virtual Console was just going to be NES, SNES.
Well, the wires get crossed here a little bit, because during the conference they said Nintendo and Super Nintendo and gave the pricing schedule, and they also said Game Boy Advance games. They didn't really say down the line for that. They sort of included it as what's going to be supported.
Huh, okay.
And then Iwata-san, after this event, clarified that they'll be adding further additional consoles down the line. And that was, like, specifically down the line will be additional consoles.
Interesting.
So, I guess, strictly speaking, we don't know when Game Boy Advance games will be a part of this Wii U Virtual Console. The way it seemed to me was that it was going to be a part of the normal launch. They just don't have the details finalized yet.
That would be pretty cool, because, of course, we don't really have a lot. We don't have any aside from Ambassador titles, right?
Oh, for 3DS, now you're talking.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's only the 10 3DS Ambassador Game Boy Advance games on any Virtual Console at all now, so having them added to the Wii U and having that library sort of expanded will be fantastic.
And it'll be interesting to see if once they expand Miiverse to 3DS, if you have titles that you own on one that you'll be able to get on the other, like a PS3 Vita sort of thing.
I don't think Nintendo will ever do that, and as applies specifically to Game Boy Advance games, I still don't really think we're going to see this added to the eShop for 3DS.
Huh.
I do not think we're going to see Game Boy Advance
games. Is it just because of the way that they, you know, custom make each emulator to be optimal for Virtual Console?
Yeah, if you notice, because you're an ambassador, you have the 10 Game Boy Advance games for 3DS. Have you played any of them?
You know, I don't know if I have. I can't think off the top of my head if I have.
Well, they run acceptably, but there are some sound emulation issues.
Huh.
I saw frame skipping issues in one. So it's really not up to Nintendo's standard of emulation.
Which is why they were only ambassadors.
So titles. I really have doubts if they can't work that out. I really have doubts that they'll ever put those out for mass consumption.
Yeah, but
now
overall great news.
As you were saying, now for the Famicom's 30th anniversary, they have, for the Wii U, started putting up sort of early release Virtual Console games.
And the thing that's special about them is that each month there's going to be a new release. We already have Balloon Fight up for the month of January, and they will cost 30 cents each. So there's really no excuse if you own a Wii U to not pay 30 cents for something like Balloon Fight. And, of course, this is the 30th anniversary of the Famicom, because Famicom was out for 2 years before the NES launch. So, I mean, I mean, I think it's still pretty cool that even though there will certainly be doing something for the NES anniversary, I'm certain, maybe. But Captain Spike, what else is coming up on the, they're calling it the Famicom Classic, what are they calling it?
I don't know.
Famicom Classic.
Well, I have 30th
anniversary of Family Computer, I guess.
30th anniversary Famicom Wii U Virtual Console Trial Campaign, which is quite a mouthful. It's 30 years of Famicom, 30-day limited time offer, 30 cents per game, which sort of tells you everything you need to know.
Really clever, really clever marketing, I have to say.
For North America, the games are starting in January, which obviously is currently active. Balloon Fight for NES is 30 cents. Starting February 20th and going to March 21st, we have F-Zero for the Super Nintendo. Starting March 20th and going to Thursday, April 18th, we have Punch-Out for the NES. Going from April 17th to Thursday, May 16th, we have Kirby's Adventure for the NES. Going from May 15th to Thursday, June 13th, we have Super Metroid for the SNES. From Wednesday, June 12th to Thursday, July 11th, we have Yoshi for the NES. And wrapping this all up, on Monday, January 15th, to Tuesday, August 13th, the original Donkey Kong for NES. We don't have any word yet on whether or not that is the NES version of Donkey Kong that has the missing arcade stages added back in, as we've talked about previously on this show, but I'm actually expecting that it will be that version of the game.
That's pretty cool. I just think it's funny, like, I liked the game Yoshi, but when you hear F-Zero, Super Metroid, Punch-Out, Kirby's Adventure, and then, oh, Yoshi. I don't remember Yoshi being that popular.
No, Yoshi is... I thought it was kind of a mess, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it when I was, like, 7.
So what you're telling me now is that on top of all of these amazing announcements, as well as the announcement that at E3 we will have video of Smash Brothers for Wii U and playable new 3D Mario, still the standout announcement of this event for you was Wind Waker HD.
Well, your standout was Shin Megami Tensei X Fire Emblem. That's very obscure.
I give zero care.
That wasn't what you were trying to say, was it? You were censoring yourself.
No, I'm just not trying to drop an F-bomb.
All right.
Rude.
Well, you might drop an F-bomb for this piece of news. Namco Bandai has confirmed that One Piece Pirate Warriors 2 will have a North American release.
Woot, woot.
Thought they were going to be like, F yeah.
Somewhat interestingly, Namco Bandai Games has confirmed with Silicon Era that they will not be porting the Vita version to North America. They will only be bringing the PS3 version.
Eh. I don't think that's going to hurt sales or anything.
No, I mean, it's Vita. No one cur. Also up, and this...
You weren't going to talk more about One Piece Pirate Warriors?
No, it's a Musou game with One Piece. I like it a lot, but probably you already know if that's your thing or not.
Okay.
Anyway, this ties into our discussion topic of the day, but Crytek has formed a new studio in Austin with former developers of the Darksiders series.
Oh, good.
Crytek opened their studio, staffing it with 25 members of the old core Vigil Games team.
That's great.
Vigil, as we'll get to, was one of the THQ studios that failed to find a buyer during last week's auction of their assets. I was very, very upset about this. I was sad to hear it. So I'm really glad that the games industry community is sort of banding together and getting gainful employment for all these guys.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, they said that it's going to probably be focusing on, like, online games, but, you know, still, just the fact that these guys are getting work, that they're not going to be unemployed and, you know.
Yep, Godspeed, you guys.
Yeah.
Next up, in sad news, Junction Point, the studio behind Epic Mickey, has been shut down.
Wow, that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, it's that's kind of really sad. Warren Spector, of course, is a legend in the games industry.
Yeah, Deus Ex, anyone?
Yes, precisely so. I'm just really bummed. I'm shocked and floored, you know. I know that I knew that Epic Mickey 2 wasn't selling nearly as well as the first Epic Mickey, but I didn't realize it was selling so bad to get them shut down so fast.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of Epic Mickey. I thought there were some aspects of the gameplay that were not as tight as they could have been, but I didn't think it was, like, terrible. You know, I think that it just had room to grow. So, yeah, this is a bummer, and, of course, what the suspicion is that they're trying to refocus their video games department, or whatever you want to call it. Like, their video games division is definitely focused on Disney Infinity at this point.
Yeah,
definitely. Trying to make that happen. I mean, which is cool, because we're definitely down for Disney Infinity, but it just sucks that, you know, that these people are going to be out of work, presumably. And, you know, Warren Spector, I'm sure, will find somewhere to call home.
Oh, definitely, definitely. He's not, I don't think he'll be out of work for any longer than he wants to be.
But, you know, it's just kind of, they were really trying to make Epic Mickey a franchise, and now it's just kind of like, nope. But, you know, Disney does what they do for a reason, and, you know, just hopefully these people who are out of work from Junction Point can, you know, find work elsewhere. You know, we wish them the best. Even if Epic Mickey was a little bit of a mess.
Next up, we have Grasshopper Manufacturer has been acquired by Gung Ho.
Nice.
The headline kind of says it all, but in case you're not familiar with Gung Ho Online Entertainment, they're primarily known for their international handling of the Ragnarok Online game.
Yes.
Gung-Ho's other acquired studios include Gravity, who had done the Ragnarok Online, of course, as well as Game Arts and Acquire.
See, for a minute, I know that you said Game Arts, but I thought you said Game Arts, like Game Mart.
Like Kmart, but
yeah,
gay?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't. So, this is exciting. This apparently does not have any standing over the games currently being published via Grasshopper Manufacturer's other already made agreements for publishing, but will, you know, in the future, probably their games will be published through Gung Ho.
That's cool. Of course, we're always glad to see creative voices like Suda51 get recognized, and, you know, this will hopefully mean great things for them, for the folks at Grasshopper.
Yep.
Speaking of Grasshopper...
This next one, yeah, you know, this is really, it's a follow-up to something we talked about last week, but it gets expanded, so I think it's fair to mention on its own. Killer is Dead announced, you know, or given detail on just finally, but a week or two ago, has already been announced for a worldwide release this summer.
Hell yeah.
That's being brought over through Xseed, whom we've talked about a fair bit over the last few episodes, because of their work on Pandora's Tower, Last Story. So it's really good to see Xseed coming through, getting these games out to the U.S. And
yeah, that's a day one purchase for me.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, too. And while we're on the topic, Xseed is also releasing the new Ys game for Vita, as well as Rune Factory 4, Valhalla Knights 3... and Ys 1 and 2 Chronicles Plus.
Nice.
So, yeah, this is very exciting. Very exciting. Xseed is, you know, they went on the record as saying Last Story was their most profitable release so far. They're, you know, in a good place, and so they're putting that money back into the industry and bringing more games over.
Yeah. Very cool.
Next up, Skullgirls PC is going to be coming out in coming weeks thanks to a funding/publishing deal with Japanese publisher Marvelous AQL. I don't know necessarily that there's a lot more to say to this than that, but a PC version of Skullgirls. F yeah.
Cool. And I see something here on Joystick about they're trying to raise money for breast cancer research.
Well, that has already happened. For the Evo tournament, the 8th game this year in competitive play was going to be decided by what game could raise the most money for breast cancer research.
That's really cool.
The period in which games had to raise money ended on Thursday night. And the winner was actually Smash Brothers Brawl. I'm sorry, Melee.
Oh, huh.
It raised something like $95,000. And all of the efforts combined raised about $200,000 from the fighting game community to money for breast cancer research.
That is so cool.
Skullgirls, for what it's worth, I recall, took second place with, I want to say, $55,000.
Wow.
I'm pulling these numbers off the top of my head, though. I do not have them in front of me. So if I'm slightly off, I apologize.
No, that's really cool. Good on the fighting community.
Yeah, you know, the fighting game community, they get a lot of negativity, and certainly I've had my own issues with them, but for the most part, they're not awful.
So, speaking of fighting games, sort of, if there's anyone out there who is a Rumble Roses fan, you might enjoy this next piece
probably
of news.
Probably just you.
Well, Frontier Gate, which is a collaboration between Tri-Ace and Konami, they're going to be putting out an expanded version, Frontier Gate Boost Plus, and there are some Rumble Roses characters that you'll be able to play as.
Oh, yeah?
Well, not really play as, but there'll be costumes, really. And there's also Quiz Magic Academy costumes. So I have to say Silicon Era was saying in their headline, Konami brings Rumble Roses into a Tri-Ace RPG. So it might have been a little bit misleading. It's not like that there's going to actually be a Rumble Roses RPG, unfortunately, because I would play the hell out of that.
I bet you would.
But, I mean, that's kind of neat. So, you know, if you are into Rumble Roses or Quiz Magic Academy, you can have costumes for your Frontier Gate Boost Plus characters. I've honestly never heard of this game, but I noticed it was Rumble Roses news, and I had to bring it up.
Delightful.
Were we about to say the same thing?
No. Also from Silicon Era.
That's what I was going to say.
I know. Oh my god, that was the joke. Shut up.
Ah!
Phantom Breaker Battlegrounds, which is being called here a Japan's Scott Pilgrim-like game, is coming to the Xbox Live Arcade next week worldwide.
That's
on
neat.
February 7th.
I love Scott Pilgrim, the game.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this because I really like the whole elaborate sprite work 2D beat-em-up. Like, that's a genre that I'm very much into.
Very cool.
That's sort of it for that. I don't have a lot more to say about it than that.
Okay, this isn't actually news, but it was also on Silicon Era.
Well, it's news.
I'm talking about something that we didn't plan on talking about. Sorry.
Well, I hate you.
Kojima-san has his own action figure, apparently.
Yeah, I saw that.
Would you buy a Kojima-san action figure?
If it's the PlayArts Kai figure that I'm looking at, yeah, I love PlayArts figures.
Yeah, it is the PlayArts figure.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it.
Yeah.
Totally not worth discussing. Oh my gosh.
See, I want a Kamiya-san action figure.
See,
you just troll everybody.
You ruined my whole rhythm, dog.
Sorry, but also from Silicon Era, yes, Captain Spike.
In actual news,
rude.
Nintendo had their investors meeting this week talking about the financial results of this last fiscal period. And things were not super awesome. They cut their quarterly expectations for the next quarter by a whole third. But in talking about ways that over the next fiscal year they intend to sort of bring these numbers back up, They stated that they intend to help Japanese developers bring 3DS games to the West.
That's rad.
If you're paying attention to numbers, the 3DS is selling like mad in Japan. In under 2 years, it's already crossed the 10 million unit mark in Japan alone. It's a bona fide hit. Here in the U.S., it's, I wouldn't say floundering, but not, it's not doing nearly as well as it's doing in Japan. So what Nintendo intends to do is intervene and work with Japanese developers to bring sort of big games that in Japan are selling very well to the U.S. It wasn't outright stated, but I assume that this involves games like, you know, Project X Zone, which we were just talking about. I suspect that that probably is part of this initiative. I'm also expecting, although I have no, I don't have any strict proof in front of me right this moment, I'm personally expecting we'll see Bravely Default Flying Fairy come to the U.S. via this agreement.
That would be great. It would shut the fanboys up, certainly.
Yeah, and you know, it really, everyone benefits. I don't, when I hear Kotaku or who have you complain about Bravely Default.
Hey, Square Enix, where the hell is Bravely Default Flying Fairy?
I don't want it to sound like I don't want Bravely Default to come
to yeah,
us.
Yeah. Like, but I definitely just, we're just trying not to be asshats about it.
Precisely. So, hopefully, I'm pretty sure it's going to come out here now. Like, I'm quite sure. And I think this is sort of the lead into that.
And good on Nintendo. I mean, we're already, like, giving them props for saving Bayonetta 2. So, I mean, it's great that they're trying to bring more games to the West when other people won't do it. Although it's interesting that, you know, the whole Operation Rainfall thing, I wonder if that kind of opened up their eyes to this whole sort of thing.
Well, you know,
really tuning into what, besides, you know, the Marios and the Zeldas and the Smash and the carts, that Nintendo gamers are really into.
Well, I think it's really worth noticing that Monolith Soft's new X game, which, as we mentioned, appears to be a new Xeno game.
And not X as in the Clamp anime / manga.
It was shown at Nintendo's worldwide Nintendo Direct events. Every region got the trailer for Monolith Soft's new X game.
Yeah, I remember the 3DS Nintendo Direct, where ours was very different. And we were like, man, it would have been really cool to see this, this, and this, which was in the Japanese one, but not in the American one. So, I mean, that's definitely cool because, you know, fans like us are disappointed when we don't see super cool Japanese games come over. So, good on you, Nintendo. You go, Gunkoko.
And to wrap up our news segment for the day, Sony, just on Thursday, late in the evening, sent out invites to all of the major press outlets, which unfortunately does not include GameBuie.
Boo!
For a PlayStation 2013 event set for February 20th.
Oh, I wonder what that could be about.
The trailer that went out with this invite invites us all to see the future! And further, investigation has indicated that this is a press event that is going to be live streamed to all of us at home. Safe Money is on an early PS4 reveal.
That's what it sounds like.
I'm a little taken by surprise, but I guess bring it. If you have something to show, I guess show it off.
I mean, really
questioning this time.
The general buzz that I'm hearing is that PS4 is going to hit this year, so.
Well, hopefully that goes well.
Yeah. You know what I was really hoping for was, oh, hey, here are some actual games for the Vita.
Yeah, that's really, for me, that's really the sort of dark part of this, that if they really do announce the PS4, they're going to be supporting PS3, Vita, and PS4 in the same window, because there's still PS3 games announced that are not coming out until later this year and next year. So, I just cannot help but think that this is just too soon.
I mean, what are we gonna get? A bunch of, like, Twilight Princess sort of things where it's just kind of, like, rushed to the next-gen console?
I think, honestly, I think we'll see a lot of current-gen games getting HD up ports.
You mean like 4K HD or whatever?
Maybe.
The thing is that, you know, this was the issue that the PS3 ran into when it launched, is that the games that came out at launch really weren't showing off what the hardware is capable of. I mean, arguably, very few developers out there really can take advantage. I mean, I'm sure that it's a lot easier to develop for now than it was, at this point, what, 8 years ago? 7, 8 years ago? But still, I mean, I don't... And this isn't even coming from Sony is a pile of dung. You know, like I said, I'm totally buried my hatchet with Sony, but I just don't want to see them make a business decision that's going to, you know, shoot themselves in the foot. Because I always thought that the PS3 needed a few more years to, you know, not only help make them not lose money, but, you know, be able to have the developer support. You know, same thing with the Vita, arguably. I don't know. I really don't know if that would have saved it. But, you know, PSP ended up doing okay.
Yeah, well, you know, Monster Hunter saved the PSP.
So, I mean, I worry. I honestly worry that, you know, they're just going to be doing the same thing that they have, you know, the past couple of console launches. And I don't know. Are we ready for a PS4? I don't think we're ready.
We are not ready.
Our bodies are not ready. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, is it going to be $600? Is it not going to have good... I mean, we'll just have to see, I guess. Maybe we will be blown away and surprised. But, I mean, then what's that going to mean for the PS3? Are they just... Yeah, I mean, they like you said, they still have things coming up for it, so we'll see.
Yeah, I didn't really think we were going to be talking about that long.
Okay.
No, I'm not trying to troll, it's just we...
Well, maybe I'll find a way to get an invite to the PlayStation event, and I won't bring you along.
That's good, because if you're just going to keep talking, then you can go alone anyway.
Rude!
I know, right? I'm super good at it, though. Being
you ready. Are,
with that little tease of what's coming, let's settle in now and take a look back. It's time for our discussion,
and it's a bittersweet one, a little more bitter than sweet, maybe.
Yeah, I wouldn't really call it bittersweet at all. It's just bitter.
It's kind of bitter.
So we're gonna talk today about sort of the sadder side of the gaming industry. I want to start off talking about THQ. First off, you know, as we've discussed here on the show, THQ filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection last month.
It was going to maybe make it through.
It did, you know. It really, things were looking really good for a minute, but ultimately, things fell apart, and there ended up being a 22-hour auction for the individual parts of what used to be THQ. We have the results of this auction, and I want to go over those right now. Relic Studios, the developer of Warhammer 40K and the Company of Heroes series, was purchased by Sega for $26.6 million.
Wow, look at Sega.
Interestingly, ZeniMax Media, who owns Bethesda, came just short of winning that portion of THQ with their own $26.3 million bid on Relic.
That would have been a good match.
I think Sega is a better match with their digital and PC support. You know, Sega, especially in Europe, but also here in the U.S., they've actually kind of made a name for themselves publishing a lot of these really in-depth strategy simulation games through Steam.
Right.
Football Manager is the one that really comes to mind, but also Total War Shogun. So there's quite a bit there. I really think that Sega is probably the best possible fit for Relic if they had to go.
Surprising, and we'll talk about this in a bit, that Sega is now acquiring other studios.
Well, the thing to remember is that while we often talk about how dire things were for Sega, through the backing of Sammy, they have a reasonably sized bankroll. Things were not so dire for Sega as they ever were for, you know, THQ.
Yeah.
They were heading to a dark place and they course corrected. But you're right. We'll talk about that a little later on. Koch Media.
I think it's Koch.
Is it? I always thought that the Koch brothers were pronounced Koch brothers. Are they Koch brothers?
You would want to pronounce it like that. I'm used to that spelling being Koch, but
on NPR, I'm pretty sure they say Koch.
Wow. Well, good for NPR.
Yeah. Well, you should listen to NPR rather than whatever nonsense you listen to. So
I listen to Top 40 Radio.
So this multimedia conglomerate purchased Volition Studios, the developer of the Saints Row and Red Faction games, for $22.3 million, as well as the Metro franchise license for $5.9
million. Huh.
So that's interesting. Crytek bought the Homefront license for $544,000. I'm actually rounding that up. This number is oddly specific. It was $544,218.
Wow.
Like, who in a corporate auction bids that specific of a number?
Right. Taking a step back now, Coke, whatever it is.
Coke.
Now, they're the ones who have the Deep Silver brand, right?
Yeah, you know, you're probably familiar with their work via Dead Island.
And the bloody bikini stump.
Rude and gross.
No, that was a Deep Silver UK poor decision.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct.
But that said, you know, Saints Row has a home, and so... I'm sorry, please continue. I wanted to mention that.
Yay! So Take-Two
purchased... Oh, hold on. Of course, as we just reported earlier, Crytek also did save a lot of the Vigil studios.
Yes, they did.
So just to bring that back. So I'm sorry. Please continue, Captain Spike.
Take-Two has purchased Evolve, which was a Turtle Rock Studios project. You might be familiar with Turtle Rock Studios via their work with Valve on Left 4 Dead.
Oh, yeah.
And this project was purchased for $10.9 million.
Interesting.
And
Ubisoft
purchased THQ Montreal, that developer of the upcoming 1666, among others, for a paltry $2.5 million.
Wow, really?
As well as that, they purchased the license to South Park, The Stick of Truth, for $3.26 million, though South Park Studios is currently putting up some legal argument over that part of this sale.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that they feel they have a right of refusal, and I don't know if they intend on exercising that or if they're just reasserting that they have that right, but
yeah,
we'll see how that one shakes out.
Ubisoft, I don't know why I said it like it was Japanese, because they're not even an Eastern developer, but that makes sense, because, you know, Ubisoft is huge up there, so.
You know, I have to say, I've always called them Ubi, but I have to admit, all of the actual French people I know that work at Ubisoft say Ubi, so.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't
Ubisoft
know.
Ubisoft.
Yeah, that's not how French people sound.
It's a Japanese person, and then even then it wasn't really, meh.
Yeah, you're just awful.
Yeah.
So... that's sort of how the auction ended, and I just want to talk a little bit about THQ, maybe remember some of the good times, and talk about some of the poor business choices that tore them apart and what they tried to do to combat that. Slidekick, do you have anything to say about THQ?
I didn't think this is how it was going to go. And I thought that THQ as an entity was going to be able to stay together, and that, you know, obviously, as we followed it and watched it develop further, I mean, it kind of, the writing was on the wall for what was going to happen. But, I mean, I was hoping for all the studios to stay together, for THQ as an entity to somehow, even not by name, but, you know, still stay together as a whole. And, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I look back at sort of what happened, and now I see how this really could not have happened any other way.
Yeah.
But I look back at some of the choices that they made. You know, they produced tons of the UDraw game tablet accessory for next-gen consoles. Well, current now, but at the time next-gen, you know, PS3, Xbox 360. Initially, it was just a Wii accessory. And when that released, it was actually somewhat, it was actually successful. The Wii UDraw game tablet was bundled with the UDraw studio game. And this actually sold reasonably well. Unfortunately, they expanded the release to the HD consoles, PS3 and 360. And that was, as described by THQ's chief financial officer, described as a disaster. My understanding is that currently there is something along the lines of 1.4 million unsold UDraw game tablet units sitting around in a warehouse somewhere that is estimated to have cost THQ around $100 million to produce. Mm.
Yeah, we saw some UDraw tablets at Toys R Us when we were buying Wii U games a couple months back. So, I mean, that's sad. It's just really unfortunate.
Yeah, so, okay, yeah, we did see them in the store, I guess. So, to me, that's really, you know, that's probably the biggest culprit. If we really had to look at sort of what happened here, I think that under the umbrella of poor management choices, that's really, you know, like bad business choices. Like, that's it. Like, UDraw game tablet.
You know, and the thing that I think is kind of notable about the THQ liquidation, would that be the right term, liquidation?
Yes.
Is that we've heard a lot of very sad news about studios closing, but this is the first one in a long time that I can think of a straight-up publisher just totally dissolving.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll discuss this a little more later on in this episode, but this is actually a thing that does happen from time to time.
It's true. It's just, I mean, of course, with things like Darksiders and things like even Saints Row, they're close to our hearts.
And, you know, that actually, that gives me a nice little window right back into what I had wanted to say before I got sidetracked, not in a negative way. I really thought that they were going to be able to pull this out, because after they restructured, after the UDraw game tablet fiasco, we were still talking about a publisher that had multiple, you know, 3 million plus unit selling franchises. You know, I think any other publisher with Saints Row or with even Darksiders, even Red Faction, even the WWF games, I really think that any other publisher really probably could have turned this around. But unfortunately, for whatever reason, it just did not gel for THQ. Darksiders 2 ended up underperforming a bit. Which is also very sad, because it still moved, what my understanding to be, a fairly tremendous number of units. But I guess once you've bled out that much, even, you know, anything less than a AAA certified blockbuster is just not going to do it.
That's sad. Darksiders 2 is a good game.
Yeah. On the tip specifically for Darksiders, there is going to be in next month, I'm sorry, this month, it's February already, oh gosh. Later this month, there is going to be a auction for the legacy titles in THQ's catalog, which now includes Darksiders, as it, you know, Vigil was not picked up and what have you. So we will have one more update on the THQ story in the future.
Yeah, and something that was kind of exciting to us, but not necessarily news, although of course Kotaku ran with it, is that over at Platinum Games, they're like, what? Darksiders was not sold? We'd like to buy it on the cheap. I mean, it was just a tweet, but of course Kotaku ran with it, and you know, and they made it news, because that's what Kotaku does. But, you know, so we don't know if that's going to actually materialize, but...
You know, I hope that Platinum can get their hands on the Darksiders license.
I think they would. That would be a great match.
Yeah, I think Platinum could really elevate
that. With their own brand of action game realness, and I think that they would have, you know, and they even expressed interest at having some people from Vigil come work, although it sounds like a lot of them are now working with Crytek USA. But, you know, that's still, you know, if anywhere it could end up, I could think of no better home.
You know, to me, Darksiders. Give Kamiya-san Bayonetta and Darksiders, tell him to make a crossover game, bam, money in the bank.
Right? Death and Bayonetta.
Yeah, just, right?
Kicking butt together.
So, do you have anything else that you want to say about THQ? That's sort of, you know, we talked about why we think they failed, talked about why we thought they could pull it out. Is there any other note you want to hit on this?
Not really, just rest in peace, THQ, Toy Headquarters.
Rest in peace, Toy Headquarters. Kotaku, of all places,
yeah,
has a really phenomenal look at the history of THQ. Our weekly segment where we suggest articles for you to read is still on break. But if we were going to recommend you read an article that's good, I would suggest you look at Kotaku's History of THQ, 1989 to 2013.
That's just so sad. They were just so close to that 25-year mark. If they had only been able to turn it around, it would have been a great 25th anniversary coming up.
Turn the beat around.
That song is not meant to be like a sad song, but you just made it very sad.
No, you don't understand. I was actually saying turn the beat around because next up I kind of wanted to talk about a few publishers and companies that were in danger of shutting down and were able to pull off the save. And I think that probably the easiest discussion point here for us is probably Sega.
Yeah, we were following that since day one of Game Buoy.
Yeah, we sure were.
I mean, and that was just, it hasn't even been a year anniversary for us yet, so just to think in that little amount of time, really, how well they turned the beat around, so to say.
Game cancellations, they, you know, rescheduled stuff, they changed their whole sort of release strategy, and, you know, they went to being sort of in the danger zone. You know, and you know, as I clarified, they weren't in strict danger of losing everything yet, but they were definitely on,
it looked
on the
dark
path.
The fact that Sonic and Football Manager were two of the only four franchises that were going to survive.
Yeah, and now they're, you know, snapping up companies, made a name for themselves on PC. You know, a lot of their digital releases people get very excited for, including us here at Game Buoy. It's just all around a huge success. And, you know, I think it's worth mentioning, unlike THQ, and of course I'm pouring out 40 as I say that, there was no U-Draw tablet sort of smoking gun. There was no awful choice or awful game or just complete piece of shit that they put their whole thrust behind.
No, that's true, but I mean, I think the story of Sega can be explored further another day.
Well, their real problem to me... Another day. Their real problem to me is that they over-budgeted quite a few games that, if we're being completely honest, were never going to sell well. And the two real examples for me that I can point out, despite being huge fans of both of these games, are probably Bayonetta and Vanquish. I love both of these games. My understanding is that over time, they have made back the money that, Sega spent on them, funding Platinum Games making them. But these were not ever going to be runaway Sonic and his friends, like, super success games. So, you know, that's... And you make enough choices like that, and you make enough sort of big-budget download games that nobody wants, and eventually, you know, you find yourself in a dark place. But really, credit to Sega, they turned it around.
They did, and I'm happy because I like Danica Patrick's All-Star Racing, Turbo Hyper Go.
Yeah, I loved Sonic Generations.
Sonic Generations was great, although not the DS version. Or was that 3DS?
3DS. And I didn't love the 3DS version.
That one was just not so good. But Sonic Generations, actually a great game.
I love how aggressively they're exploiting their back catalog.
Yeah, seriously. Seeing a lot of
these great Sega CD and Saturn games and Dreamcast games. Getting, you know, Steam releases and PSN/XBLA releases.
Yeah, Jet Set Radio.
Knights,
Crazy Taxi. We've talked about all of these on air, so I'm happy to see that Sega got on his feet, especially on today, Hedgehog Day.
Oh, yeah, huh?
You know, just to think back on, oh my gosh. No, it hasn't quite been the 20th anniversary of Hedgehog Day, has it? We're getting close, though.
What year was that?
Sonic 3, was that 94 or 95? No, it was definitely 1994, I remember. I'm not going to give the whole anecdote about Hedgehog Day, but just to think that nearly 20 years ago, like, Sega was just huge, and then, you know, they almost really went to a bad place. So, I mean, it's good to think, you know, that on this remembrance of Hedgehog Day... I'm sorry, I'm just really trying to make Hedgehog Day happen.
It sounds like you're sniffling, like you're crying. Are you crying?
I'm not crying. I just have a lot of feels about Sonic the Hedgehog 3. Anyways, we should probably move on before I do start crying. What other turn the beats around?
Well, how about Squaresoft?
Oh my goodness, yes. That was kind of a dark period for them.
Now, before their merger with Enix, you know, there is a smoking gun here. Do you know what it's called? I'm asking you. That's not rhetoric. Do you know
what it's called? I was wondering if you were waiting for a response from the those out there in Radioland.
I wasn't.
No, of course. It was Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, which I have to say, before we... talk about it and the financial impact it had on Squaresoft. I love that movie. I think, you know, it gets a lot of hate, probably because of what it did to the company financially, but I think it really is a Final Fantasy. I will defend that to my grave.
Yeah, I actually quite like Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, but it's impossible to overstate the fact that that movie cost $137 million to make in 2001 dollars.
Yeah.
So
wasn't that based out of Honolulu or something?
Yes.
Square Pictures?
Yes, it was. And in its entire box office run, it only recouped worldwide about 85 of those million.
Ouch.
So, you know, that was a very pricey mistake. But as we all know, you know, Squaresoft merged with Enix, and
it's been going great for them.
Yeah, it's been going
even very though you know Final Fantasy is dead, and we're never going to see Versus 13.
Yeah, and I appreciate that is a prevalent attitude.
It's a wrong attitude.
I wouldn't say that. I'm not going to call someone's opinion attitude. Whatever. I'm not. I am. I know you are. But. I just really can't overstate here. I appreciate the idea that somehow Square is lessened by this agreement, that somehow Enix is lessened by this agreement. But I look at things like Dragon Quest IX. I look at the Dragon Quest remakes on DS and 3DS. I look at even, you know, Final Fantasy Type-0, Kingdom Hearts... I personally really like Final Fantasy 13 and 13-2, so I would include them. I look at Dissidia.
Theater rhythm.
Theater rhythm, yeah, absolutely. I feel like Square has really tapped into continuing to make great games, and something that they do more now than they used to do is I really feel like Square experiments with their properties a little more. Now, I think that probably a lot of people disagree. I know they get a lot of hate for their experimentation within the mobile world. Again, you look at all the hate they get for the pricing of their games, for what their games are, in the case of All the Bravest. But you look at what they're doing. They're doing like new versions of classic JRPG archetypes in Bravely Default Flying Fairy. They're making rhythm game Final Fantasy spin-offs in Theater Rhythm. They're making fighting game spin-offs in Dissidia. I do not think in the days of Squaresoft we saw that breadth of experimentation and willingness to try new things. And a further willingness to experiment with their already existing franchises.
Yeah, I mean, although I still think that there are things like Vagrant Story and stuff that that a lot of us would like to see. So I overall think that Square's doing great. Square Enix.
Yeah.
And I don't know why people would think that either is lessened. I think that partnership has been one of the best partnerships, one of the best mergers that we've seen as far as mutually benefiting both the companies as they existed prior to the merger. As we talked about Namco Bandai before, and Bandai didn't have too much going on, but Square and Enix both had great libraries. So I mean, I think just combining them, that was probably the best thing that could have happened. And even if you're not a fan of what the Final Fantasy franchise has become, remember there's a lot more to Squaresoft than just Final Fantasy. And then I mean, the other thing you have to look at are things like the fact that Square Enix, as an entity, has now purchased Eidos, and they've done a couple of other companies as well, I believe, right?
Yes.
So, I mean,
Taito comes to mind.
Taito, yeah, because Puzzle Bobble, or Bust a Move, that the 3DS title, that was published by Square Enix. And, I mean, was that even, like, for, like, New Zealand Story, the DS release, was that even a Square Enix at that point?
You know, I couldn't say off the top of my head, just because I don't recall. I see how maybe it would have been, I'm just not sure.
Yeah, but, I mean, so it's another example of kind of like a Sega. But, I mean, you think about, like we said, how Sega at their height were huge. And so, you know, for them to have fallen and come back, although I would say that, you know, I don't think that, it's hard to say now, you know, over 10 years later, what would have happened without the merger. But, you know, I think based on the strength of Final Fantasy alone, even with that flop of Spirits Within, I think that it would have been safe somehow. Kind of like how you said that Sammy has had Sega's back. I think Squaresoft would have somehow survived, but, you know, it didn't just survive, it's thriving, so.
Yeah.
Even if people don't agree, and I mean, this is kind of relates to how we talked about Capcom. We may not agree all the time about, you know, what they're choosing to do with certain franchises like Mega Man, but, you know, that's just going to happen, so, I mean, just looking at it as from a financial and business viewpoint, you know, I'd say that, you know, they had a big flop, they recovered from it, and they're doing better than ever.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And there's one last case study I'd like to look at before we move on from the discussion this week. I want to talk about Interplay Entertainment. And Interplay is sort of a curious beast because they have died and been phoenixed down and died and been phoenixed down. And they just recently died again and are trying to phoenix down themselves. If you're not familiar, of course, with the vocabulary choices I'm using, A Phoenix Down is an item in Final Fantasy that you cast, that you use on a downed player to sort of revive them.
Yeah, like the down of a Phoenix.
So Interplay has announced bankruptcy, declared bankruptcy several times. They've been forced to sell off their IPs. They've been forced to sell off their development houses. And it's almost cyclical where this will happen. A few years later, they'll pull it back together. They'll reform strong. And then they'll have to sell off their new assets. These guys have been in the business for, you know, since 83. I know some of our listeners are into older PC games, which is awesome. You might be familiar with their games Neuromancer, which is based on, you know, my favorite book of all time. Bard's Tale, Battle Chest.
Oh, Battle Chest, yeah.
Descent, of course, was huge in the early 90s. I used to play that with my best friend and my roommate all the time. Obviously, in the later 90s, they had the Star Trek license and did a ton of great Star Trek games. They made Fallout, of course.
A little game called Baldur's Gate.
Baldur's Gate.
And, you know, there was just some no-name company, BioWare. They're not doing much now.
Well, you know, they also published BioWare's MDK2.
Oh, huh.
Yeah, so, again, just a real storied history. I believe they published Blackthorn, which is the platformer that Blizzard made for the Super Nintendo years back. They published the Out of This World game for Genesis and Super Nintendo, which overseas was known as Another World.
I was always disappointed that it wasn't based on that TV show about the girl Evie who could freeze time by touching her fingers.
I am not here for that. No, I know exactly what you mean.
I just remember being a kid and being like, what? That game isn't about Evie, the girl who can freeze time.
You know, they did the Clay Fighter games.
Oh, I remember Clay Fighter.
Oh, yeah. I loved them. I loved Clay Fighter 33 and a third.
Yeah.
They published Lost Vikings, also by Blizzard.
Blizzard, Silicon and Synapse at that time, I think. Or were they Blizzard at that point? But
I think they were Blizzard. In fact, I'm looking over this. Like, a lot of the old console work that Blizzard did was published by Interplay.
That's interesting.
So,
like we're seeing BioWare, Blizzard, some very... Even though, you know, the BioWare's kind of a different story because it's basically just Electronic Arts at this point. That said, you know, so BioWare, Blizzard, both very successful these days and work with Interplay.
Currently,
Bethesda now has the Fallout title. So,
well, exactly. And, you know, they sort of... It was very highly publicized a year or so ago that Interplay was making a Fallout Online game, which they thought was keeping in their agreement with Bethesda when they sold Bethesda the Fallout IP back in their bankruptcy concerns back in, looks like 2007, according to my notes here. So, it really looks like this Fallout Online game is not going to happen. It was canceled in 2011, but somewhat recently they sort of announced via their relaunched Black Isle Studios that they are trying to revive it as Project V13, which of course a lot of people are making the obvious connection to Vault 13 or something, I don't know. I'm not super into Fallout or whatever, but, you know, they did a re-release of Battle Chess. Just in July, they did an HD re-release of MDK2 on Steam, MDK2 HD, which I understand to have been somewhat successful. And, you know, now they're doing some Android games to just try and get some money coming in.
I'm just looking at some of their other library. They did Mario Teaches Typing.
I loved Mario Teaches Typing.
They published that. They did.
So it's really exciting, and you know, I know that they have some money still coming in through sales of the old Fallout games, including Fallout Tactics, Brotherhood of Steel. Interplay's rights to sell and merchandise those older Fallout games, however, expire on the last day of 2013. So I guess if they're going to turn this around, it's going to have to be this year, because that's probably their strongest lifeline right now, is the sales of the original Fallout titles.
Yeah.
So we hope that works out for Interplay. I'm including them in this discussion because I choose to believe that they're going to pull it out. I choose to believe that the next 11 months are going to go well enough. They're going to get another battle chess or something out, I hope, and hopefully this will work out for these guys.
Yeah, I hope so too, because I mean they've really brought a lot of great games to us and gave a lot of companies a chance who are now doing really well. So, you know.
So now the ball is in your court, Radioland. What would you like to say about THQ, Sega, Square Enix, or Interplay? Tweet us at gamebuoy.org. And, of course, org is spelled out as D-O-T-O-R-G.
Gamebuoy.org, and it's spelled out as D-O-T-O-R-G.
And just, you know, what you think about these four companies and their varying states of success and or failure based on the harsh market realities of the industry. Of course, if you also just want to reminisce about Clade Fighter 63 and a third, or you want to reminisce about MDK2, or even, you know, some THQ games. You think we don't talk about Darksiders enough? Let us know. Love to hear from you. We love our fans.
We do. We love you.
With that, I think it's time
to
check
really
in.
We really love you.
I think it's time to check in and find out.
I said, hey, what's going on?
So I'm going to let you go first, Captain Spike, because my what's up this week is going to be kind of tied into something that we just did.
Okay. Oh, excellent. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yes.
So I think probably the main game I've played since our last episode is I put a lot more time into DMC, Devil May Cry.
Oh, really now?
I've put in, like 12 hours.
Respectable.
And, you know, I have to say, I don't like it as much as I liked Devil May Cry 3, but I probably like it about as much as I like Devil May Cry 4, which is, frankly, a lot. So, well done. Huh. My foot is firmly in my mouth. I'm
yeah,
because
you were talking smack about that.
Well, I think that I had every reasonable expectation to,
oh, yeah,
to
yeah.
suspect
that. Well, how do you like New Dante?
I still don't care for him, but... the writing in the game isn't awful. It takes
Is he
itself,
whiny?
It takes itself a little too seriously. I don't like New Dante's sort of passive whiny attitude as much
oh,
as
so
old
he,
Dante.
He's the Alaska Thunderfuck of the Devil May Cry franchise.
But I do have to say that where it really counts, the gameplay and the aesthetic, I really do think that they nailed it. They created a visually interesting world that is, to be completely honest, more visually interesting than the old Devil May Cry world.
Now, I want to know, do you think that this is going to be like a Prince of Persia thing where they tried to reboot it and then the fans weren't having it and they went back to the original Prince of Persia?
Well, you know, we'll have sales numbers for the U.S. release month of this game in a week or two once the January NPDs hit. And I think then we'll be able to look at that a little bit better.
I can't help but wonder if we'll see an old Dante, new Dante crossover game.
I wouldn't mind that. I think that there would be some compelling content there. But overall, yeah, I'm very happy with DMC Devil May Cry. Stepped down from the best of the genre, but still quite good in its own right. Ninja Theory really pulled the combat out. And,
yeah, Ninja Theory doesn't fuck around.
I would disagree. I think Ninja Theory is typically awful. I'm
really?
Not a big fan of Enslaved. I definitely didn't like Heavenly Sword. So, yeah, I'm generally
I didn't
not
think
fan.
Either of those were terrible, but I didn't think that they were, like, you know, classics.
But I definitely think that they made DMC Devil May Cry happen, in spite of all odds. And I definitely will not hesitate to say that I was wrong.
Would you recommend it as a my first Devil May Cry for
you know,
newcomers to the franchise?
I think it would probably work really well as a first installment for people. Especially since the one of the things about the combat that doesn't work super well for me, but I think will probably work really well for most people. The combat is simplified a bit, and designed to look very cool with very little work. And I think that that's probably really rewarding to people. In the older Devil May Cry games, if you wanted to look cool and look like you're playing the game well,
you have to play the game well.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of the changing role of challenge in games.
Yes, exactly so. So, it is not that way in DMC Devil May Cry. You look very cool even if you don't really know what you're doing. But
you're having fun, is the bottom line.
But I'm enjoying the game. Overall, I'm happy with it. It's not everything I hoped, but it's not everything I feared.
Excellent.
How about you?
Just a little note. I've put in about 40 plus hours of Civilization V at this point. But I talked about Civ Woo-hoo. Last time. What I really want to talk about is the fact that Captain Spike and I popped in Mario Party 8 for the Wii. This was the first Wii Mario Party, if my memory serves correctly. It was the one, you know, with, like, the city map and the DK's jungle map. And, well, I was supposed to talk about it a little bit, because even though this is my section, my turn to talk about what's up, it involves both of us, so.
You won.
I won. I was dry bones. I ended up with 5 stars because I got all 3 bonus stars. We popped it in kind of as a joke. We're like, hey, want to play Mario Party?
LOL.
And I was like, yeah, kind of. And we were expecting to be, like, not really having fun with it. We were expecting to, like, honestly kind of talk crap about it. But then, we got into it. At first, Birdo, who was controlled by an AI, was taking an early lead. And Wario was also an AI. He was taking an early lead, too. It was like, crap, we're going to lose to the AI. This is not fun. But then we were really getting into the mini games. We got the mini game where you have to vigorously shake the Wiimote as if you were shaking a soda can. And you can only imagine that Captain Spike and I were trying to out shake each other. I won. So, yeah, well, boys.
I'm not a gross bitch like you.
Boys, if you like the sound of that, you can email me at slagkick@gamebuoy.org.
Slagkick.gamebuoy.org.
Not dot gamebuoy, at symbol.
Okay, what he said.
You're just jealous that I won the soda can shaking contest.
No, I'm not. I was horrified.
You got second place, though. Your soda stream was pretty high.
I was horrified. I continue to be horrified that this
conversation
is happening.
Okay, fine. Fine, you've said your piece.
Horrific, horrifying, awful.
There was also the mini game where it was a coin battle, where it was basically just up to chance. Like, Captain Spike didn't remember this one. It was Cut the String, I think was what it was called. And it's where you basically, you know, the coin battles, of course, are where everyone has to get is forced to put in a pool of a certain amount of coins. This case was just 10 coins. And then whoever wins gets the lion's share, so to speak, of the coins. And it just so happened that the one we got was a game of chance. And Captain Spike didn't really remember it. He's like, what is this? And I'm like, no, seriously, this is just a game of chance. And that's the one where you have to cut the string, and then if you cut the wrong one, it launches you off into, like, the Grand Canyon, basically. And I was like, no, seriously, Captain Spike, it is, like, super intense. And we were both, like, going to cut our strings and just, like, sitting there in anticipation. When it didn't launch us off, we're like, oh, thank God. Like, but I'm not just making this up, right, Captain Spike? That actually happened.
No, that actually happened.
And then one that I actually thought was brilliant, and I didn't even remember this, is the booting gallery, of course, a pun on a shooting gallery, but it was basically like a House of the Dead homage with booze. It was really cute, even down
that's
to like
booze like the ghosts, not booze like the liquor.
Well, obviously, it's rated E for everyone by the ESRB. But that said, it really was an homage to like House of the Dead, even straight to like the way the camera work of it. I was just like, wow, that's really cute. And, you know, just made me really appreciate that Nintendo really loves to
Be awesome.
Be awesome. And acknowledge cool things in game design. So, surprisingly, Mario Party 8, super fun. We only did a shorter game, but I get the feeling that there might be a longer one tonight. So, makes me really look forward to Mario Party U. And, you know, even maybe a little bit Wii U Party or whatever that's called. Even though it looks a little basic, if it'll hold me over until Mario Party comes out and it has a more asynchronous gameplay, you know, I'm down. And, you know, I think it was great to just reaffirm that the Mario Party's games are a good time, even if you're like, really? I think most people have fond memories of, you know, early Mario Party, you know, mashing buttons and all that. I think most people who we talk to who are gamers have some fond memories of Mario Party, and I think it's just good that even going back to this was a pretty early Wii game from what I remember. It was 2007, so yeah, pretty early in the Wii lifespan. Still was fun. So and you know, it's kind of almost a precursor to what we were getting with Nintendo Land. You know, I mean, I wouldn't say that Mario Party was totally asynchronous, but, you know, the 1v3 games or that sort of thing. So, Mario Party, fun times. And I won! Yay!
Rude.
So, with that, we have some listener feedback! Woohoo! Woo! This feedback comes from longtime Game Buoy listener Crystal from California. And she was listening to our last episode, episode 19, Let's Talk About Mature Content, Baby. And she said, you guys missed Dead or Alive, more specifically Dead or Alive Volleyball. There's actually a code to have them be naked. You know, the funny thing is that Crystal is totally right. We actually, as we wrapped last episode, we were like, crap, we forgot about Dead or Alive. Even considering the fact that here in the Game Buoy Studios, we have a Dead or Alive 3 poster hanging up. So,
yeah. So, you know, we actually have a fair number of other mature content sex talking points. So I would not be too surprised, Crystal, and anyone else out there that has any interest in hearing us talk about that matter, I wouldn't be too surprised to hear a volume 2 to that topic in the next few months.
Yeah, definitely, because I think we've got a couple of things that we could bring up for sure.
Yeah, definitely. There's quite a few things I'd really like to discuss.
We here at Game Buoy are definitely interested in looking at sex, sexuality, gender roles, and all of that. So definitely look forward to hearing more from that. And thank you, Crystal, for listening and for your feedback. And if you would like to get in touch with us, there are many ways you can do so. The first place, of course, would be Facebook at facebook.com/GameBuoy, like our super fan Crystal.
Facebook.com/GameBuoy.
And you can also email us. Email is still a technology that people use, believe it or not. I have not gotten a listener email yet, so
I got one, but it's been a long time now.
That's cool. You can email Captain Spike at cpt.spike.
cpt.spike.
At gamebuoy.org.
At gamebuoy.org.
And you can email me at slagkick@gamebuoy.org.
slagkick@gamebuoy.org.
As always, we would love your iTunes reviews and ratings, preferably 5 stars, but if you think we suck, give us 1 star. And, you know, we're here for you, so we want to know what we can do better. Or if we're doing it good, then we would love to hear that. And we fucking love Twitter.
Yeah, no, Twitter is something I'm really into quite a bit.
I love communicating with people in 160 characters or less.
Yep.
And you can find us, as we mentioned earlier, at gamebuoy.org. That's GameBuoy.org.
What he said.
Yeah, I knew you weren't going to repeat that. And we've got some shout-outs, and I think the first shout-out that we need to make before we go on to our regular shout-outs is that...
Well, you know, as we mentioned, we're still retooling our Read of the Week segment.
Yes.
We still do, in fact, have the desire to point out good articles for you to read and bad articles for you to read.
Yeah, but we want to do that in the best way possible.
We're going to do that. We're going to try to make the next one last. We're not going to bring drag culture into it. We're not going to be... We'll probably still be super bitchy and catty. But if you want to hear us talk about drag culture...
Talk about reading.
And you love us being bitchy and or catty, I highly recommend you look at our side project, the Reading is Fundamental RuPaul's Drag Race podcast.
We're actually doing that with Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio.
You might be familiar with Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, because I basically take all of my cues from those guys.
Yeah, and also kind of hanging out on air is producer Shane, who of course is best known as one of the four hosts of the Best Little Horde House in Azeroth, which is the place for World of Warcraft news, but never too seriously. Also featuring Rod Roberts.
For our normal shout-outs, of course, we're big fans of Koopa Club.
Hold on. We should probably tell them where they can find Reading is Fundamental.
If you must.
So, you know, I work hard for the money, so this doesn't have its own domain name. But you can find it. You're very in an 80s pop singer mood this week. You can find it at slagkick.com/reading.
Slagkick.com/reading.
Or if you like Tumblr, we're at rifpodcast.tumblr.com.
Hey, you know, by next week, we should have a Game Buoy Tumblr.
We should. And we promise that it won't be like a sexy fan art reblogging. We'll try to actually bring you legit content. And on Twitter, our RuPaul's Drag Race Twitter podcast Twitter is RIF Podcast on Twitter. So
RIF Podcast.
So if there's anyone out there who wants to hear more of us, has ever dreamed of the two of us and Rob Roberts from OLR and Horde House
being super bitchy,
and then Shane playing Pokemon while we're talking about Drag Race,
I can't hesitate enough. This is the show to listen to if you like us being bitchy.
Yes. I'm sorry, and I'll let you get back to your shout-outs now.
Well, you know, big fans of Koopa Club. They do what we do, except they're gayer and even more Nintendo-oriented.
They're also pretty cute.
Check these guys out. Yeah, I would with several of them.
Yeah.
You
with
have
all
some...
of them.
What?
With all of them.
You have some shout-outs.
I do. These guys I probably wouldn't do, but only because they're straight. Nerdgasm Network, they're the wildest, sometimes 3 hours, usually, of shock jock video game radio that you will ever come across. And I say, you know, I kind of lampoon the 3 hours thing, but the fact that those guys can go on for 3 hours and I'm still entertained the whole time, and I always have a blast when I go on air, you know, that speaks highly of them. Also, Girls Gone WoW, if you like a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, and Video Game Outsiders, the podcast for those of you who are down for outsiders' perspective on video games. Of course, I like to think of them for their accomplishments of the Xbox Live Community Award. Like they're the real deal. So, and we love Michelle Madison. We love hearing what her and her posse throw down. So go check them out. If you think that there are some podcasts that we need to be listening to, some great video game podcasts out there, please let us know. We're always down to hear other people's views and opinions about gaming, especially when they have something a little different to offer. We'd also like to thank Zelda Reorchestrated for our wonderful opening theme. Go check them out today. Give them page hits. And with that, any last thoughts, Captain Spike?
No, I think we're good. Do you have any last thoughts?
I want to go kick your ass in Mario Party again.
Sounds good. Well, then, with that, as ever and always, we implore you, keep gaming, keep thinking, and see you, Space Cowboy. Thank you. Ahoy, mateys. Welcome to Game Buoy Video Game Podcast. Your butt is on my face twice monthly.